Blog Talk Radio.
Open Gangnam Style. Gangnam Style.
낮에는 따사로운 인간적인 여자, 커피 한 잔에 여유를 아는 품격 있는 여자, 밤이 오면 심장이 뜨거워지는 여자, 그런 반전 있는 여자.
Laser, and I thank you for deciding to spend part of your afternoon with me. Today, in addition to making sense with fact-based analysis of new political news since our last show on Thursday, I'm going to go in depth into the candidacy and character of Mitt Romney. Later, I'll recap last week's news and talk about what's going to happen next week, including my predictions for the election and Electoral College. Finally, we'll end with our trademark Hall of Fame and shame list for those politicians and pundits who either deserve praise for making sense or deserve criticism for talking nonsense. At any time during the show, if you want to call in and talk to me, please do so. The call-in number for the show is 917-889-3891. So let's get right into it with new news since Thursday's show. Mitt Romney was in Ohio toward the end of this week trying to make the case for his presidency, and may have really caused some problems for himself. He talked about the car maker Jeep, which is part of the Chrysler family, moving production to China. The problem is that it isn't true. NBC News' Ed Schultz called him out on it, and let's listen.
I saw a story today that one of the great manufacturers in this state, Jeep, now owned by the Italians, is thinking of moving all production to China. I will fight for every good job in America. I'm going to fight to make sure trade is fair, and if it's fair, America will win.
Moving all production to China. Folks, this is a gigantic lie. Earlier this week, Chrysler's parent company announced that it is in talks to increase operations throughout the entire world. Now, as Bloomberg News reported, Chrysler referred to adding Jeep production sites rather than shifting output from North America to China. Now, Chrysler responded to this controversy, and I want you to pay close attention to what a corporation said about what Mitt Romney said. First, they start out saying, "Let's set the record straight. Jeep has no intention of shifting production of its Jeep models out of North America to China. It's simply reviewing the opportunities to return Jeep output to China for the world's largest auto market. U.S. Jeep assembly lines will continue to stay in operation." A careful and unbiased reading of the Bloomberg take would have saved unnecessary fantasies and extravagant comments.
It doesn't take a genius to see a pattern here with Mitt Romney, right? He lied about Jeep outsourcing jobs to China, and Ed Schultz got him on that. He lied about his positions in the debates with President Obama. He lied and flip-flopped repeatedly in an attempt to win the Republican nomination in 2008, and he lied to win the Republican nomination in 2012. And in both of those races, was cited numerous times by his various Republican opponents for being dishonest and lying. Now, I got to back up here a bit and clue you in on a personal note. I think my parents are some of my biggest critics in politics. My mother doesn't like me to use the word liar to describe Mitt Romney. She thinks I should use more euphemistic terms like he isn't telling the truth or he's being dishonest, you know, things like that. Normally, I agree with that. And I think politics in the United States does need to become less vitriolic. And I think that's really usually how I talk about people in politics. There are times in politics, however, when things that are happening are so bad and so serious that you need to call them out in plain language. Mitt Romney's seeming inability to tell the truth is one of those situations, because even though I have President Obama ahead, and I'll take you all through that later, it's close enough to where Mitt has a shot at winning this election. It's a serious issue to have a potential president who is a serial liar. We had President Bush lie on weapons of mass destruction. We had President Clinton, who I like, not want to tell us the truth about his affair. And those one or two issues were a big deal. No people of any country want their leaders to lie to them. Again, though, those are one or two issues. Imagine having a president who lies as much as Mitt Romney does. Various organizations have analyzed the debates, for instance. One of them, thinkprogress.org, determined that Mitt Romney lied 82 times in his three debates. Virtually every statement that he made in the debates had something demonstrably untrue in it. Now, this is a serious issue, and this accusation by me is a serious one. As suggested by the name of this show, I'm all about making sense and the facts and being able to provide backup for my accusations. So let me give you some. I think you'll all agree that if I can get four of the most prominent Republicans in the Republican Party to agree with me about my accusations regarding Mitt Romney, that you can confidently accept them as the truth, right? Well, let me get some for you. Let's listen to Newt Gingrich and his opinion of Mitt Romney.
I just think he ought to be honest with the American people and try to win as the real Mitt Romney, not try to invent a poll-driven, consultant-guided version that goes around with talking points. And I think he ought to be candid. I don't think he's being candid.
Instead of Mitt Romney, somebody who will lie to you to get to be president will lie to you when they are president. I have to ask you, are you calling Mitt Romney a liar?
Yes.
You're calling Mitt Romney a liar?
Well, you seem shocked by it. Yes.
And the article apparently outlined in detail that Bain Capital acquired a company, in essence looted it, and then laid off 1,700 people. Now, if that's accurate, and if there are three or four or five examples like that, I think that's troubling. I don't think those of us who believe in free markets and those of us who believe that, in fact, the whole goal of investment is entrepreneurship and job creation would find it pretty hard to justify rich people figuring out clever legal ways to loot a company, leaving behind 1,700 families without a job.
So there you had Newt Gingrich, former Speaker of the House, a candidate for president this year, and a candidate for the Republican nomination, call Mitt Romney a liar twice and cast aspersions on his ability to do business and create jobs. We'll talk more about that later. That was Newt Gingrich calling him a liar twice. How about John McCain? John McCain, the last Republican nominee for president, what does he think about Mitt Romney?
The best indicator that I'm doing very well is when you're attacked by Romney. I don't know how to respond to some of it because his position may change tomorrow.
Again, same theme, dishonest, flip-flopping. You can't take anything that he says seriously or as the truth. How about Rudy Giuliani? What does he think about Mitt Romney?
I ran against him in 07, 08. I have never seen a guy, and I've run a lot of elections, supported a lot of people, opposed them. Never seen a guy change his positions on so many things, so fast, on a dime.
Again, we keep hearing the same theme. This is not somebody that you can trust. Whatever he says about the issues, he probably will change his opinion before tomorrow. How about Fox News host and former Arkansas Governor Mike Huckabee? What has he said about Mitt Romney?
And I think he's certainly being dishonest about his own record. When he says that he had the endorsement of the NRA, he did not. When he says he didn't raise taxes, in fact, there were $500 million of fees that were raised during his time. When he talks about my record or John McCain's, he's making up stuff. It's just incredible. When he talks about our spending increases, which in my case wasn't true, he says things about my position on immigration. It's not true. And I don't know, maybe you have another word for it. The only word I knew in Arkansas, we kind of kept it simple there. We called it dishonest.
Mike Huckabee, keeping it simple, as they do in Arkansas, simply calling Mitt Romney dishonest. There's this recurring theme throughout what I've been telling you, and it would be great if we could get the truth from prominent Republicans, because I think it's clear from what I just played for you that even throughout the Republican Party, even throughout the leadership of the Republican Party, there is this deep disdain for Romney. There's this perception that he is a liar, that he does not tell the truth, that he changes his position to fit whatever the situation is. That's who Mitt Romney is. Beyond that, I've placed links to the thinkprogress.org evaluations of Romney's 82 lies in three debates on the main page for this show and on my blog, stevelazer.blogspot.com. So there's no question. Romney is a serial liar. That by itself is a complete disqualification for any serious leadership role, let alone President of the United States. The reasons Romney isn't qualified go further, however. There are four main reasons I cite that Romney does not have the chops to be president and commander-in-chief. Number one, I just talked about, he's dishonest. He lies so much and so often, it's almost impossible to keep up with all of his lies. The second major issue Romney has is that we're still coming out of a serious economic situation with unemployment still too high, and he has no record of being able to create jobs. Now, you're probably surprised when I say that, because in every single one of the debates, he tried to claim that he has some ability to create jobs. This is one of those things that I don't understand why the Obama campaign let Romney get away with. When Romney was governor of Massachusetts, he was 47th out of 50 governors in job creation. In other words, he was third worst out of 50. He was horrible at it. Under his tenure, Massachusetts small businesses have the second worst success of any small businesses in the 50 states. Romney has been allowed to pretend he knows how to create jobs and get an economy moving. The exact opposite has been proven by his recent tenure as governor of Massachusetts. He was so bad at it that his approval rating in the state dipped below 30% by the time he left office. He couldn't even think of running for re-election because of how bad he was thought of by the people of his state. I call Romney the Peter Principle candidate. Peter Principle says that people tend to rise to their level of incompetence. This applies to Romney because he was a guy who failed at governor and now wants to be president. I mean, it actually means Romney would be a double Peter Principle candidate because he was already clearly incompetent as governor. And make no mistake, I don't think you guys really need me to tell you this, but I'm going to say it anyway. President of the United States is a job that is many times harder than governor of Massachusetts. If Romney couldn't manage to be successful as governor there, he has no chance of being successful as president. Again, though, let's look at the facts. President Obama is currently outpolling Governor Romney in the state where Romney was a governor by 60% to 40%. That's a 20-point margin. That's a massacre. Massachusetts is the only place where people have lived under both a Romney and Obama administration, and their choice between the two is clear. The people of the rest of this country need to listen to what the people of Massachusetts are telling them. They need to understand what Romney's record in Massachusetts is telling them. Third reason why I think Mitt Romney is unqualified. We have Romney's utter inability to articulate anything resembling a foreign policy position during the third debate. He knew so little that he agreed with Obama on just about everything the president said, and whenever he could, he pivoted to the economy so he could claim he would be better at job creation than the president, something that we now know is untrue. Finally, in terms of leadership, we're not seeing it from Mitt Romney. Various senators and every other Republican seems to be pulling the party. They want to pull it, and Romney doesn't have the leadership skills to lead his party. And that's the best spin of what we've seen in the last week regarding Romney's leadership skills. The other possibility is that he actually agrees with the Todd Akins, the Joe Walshes, and the Richard Murdochs out there with regard to women's right to have control over their own bodies. That's another recurring theme. Romney is afraid to stand up to anyone. He claimed a few months ago, he would be better than President Obama at standing up to North Korea and Iran, but he couldn't even face Whoopi Goldberg on The View. He had a scheduled appearance on The View, but he chickened out of that. He can't or will not stand up to the members of his own party when they say outrageous things about women and women's rights. So we have this Romney guy who is nearly polling even with the president. He's a know-nothing on foreign policy, who has a track record of failure at creating jobs, is a serial liar, and a man so devoid of leadership skills, he couldn't lead a man dying of thirst to water. That's our Republican nominee. On to other news. Thursday, on the Piers Morgan Show, John Sununu suggested that Colin Powell's endorsement of Obama was because of race. Let's listen.
Final question. Colin Powell has decided to opt for President Obama again, despite apparently still being a Republican. Is it time he left the party, do you think?
Frankly, when you take a look at Colin Powell, you have to wonder whether that's an endorsement based on issues or whether he's got a slightly different reason for preferring President Obama.
What reason would that be?
Well, I think when you have somebody of your own race that you're proud of being president of the United States, I applaud Colin for standing with him.
Let's forget about the insulting part of this for a minute, okay? Colin Powell rose up through the ranks of the U.S. Army from second lieutenant to the highest rank in the armed forces, chairman of the Joint Chiefs. In that time, he served under officers of all races, commanded enlisted personnel and officers of all races. He's a registered Republican. He served in the George W. Bush administration. But all of that is moot, according to Sununu. Whatever values he has, he would toss aside for race. It's about the most insulting thing I can possibly think of saying about somebody. For Sununu and others, I guess it's too much to believe the many reasons that Powell articulated when he gave his endorsement, reasons that are completely correct and you can back up with facts. Incidentally, Colin Powell's former chief of staff when Powell was Secretary of State, Colonel John Wilkerson, had this to say about the situation on the Ed Show.
Well, on Governor Sununu's part, I think it was an unfortunate slip of words, but you're insinuating something, and you're insinuating something that is absolutely accurate. My party, unfortunately, is the bastion of those people, not all of them, but most of them, who are still basing their decisions on race. Let me just be candid. My party is full of racists. And the real reason a considerable portion of my party wants President Obama out of the White House has nothing to do with the content of his character, nothing to do with his competence as commander-in-chief and president, and everything to do with the color of his skin. And that's despicable.
Since Colonel Wilkerson was absolutely clear, let me be absolutely clear. That's a Republican saying that, a member of a Republican administration, the last one. That's not a Democrat saying that. I didn't say that. That's Republican Colonel John Wilkerson saying it. Next, we have a story about voter purge in LaPorte County, Indiana. We're going to do a more in-depth story on voter suppression in the next few episodes of Making Sense. The problems have been apparent in LaPorte County, Indiana, since early voting started. The Washington Post covered this in a story, and they reported that LaPorte County Democratic Party Chairman John Jones began to suspect there was a problem late last week when he started getting calls from early voters who said they'd been turned away by election officials as ineligible. The Post goes on to say that the county set out in 2011 to clean up its rolls, purging those who had failed to vote in the previous two federal election cycles. The exercise was expected to involve around 800 names, many of them people who were dead, incarcerated, or who had left the Northwest Indiana County, which is about 60 miles east of Chicago. About 800 people are supposed to cover. But Jones was hearing from residents who were quite alive and had voted in 2008. When state officials looked at the list of canceled voters, it turned out that the purge was more of a mini massacre. Records show that more than 13,000 voters had been dropped, which is about 16% of the 80,000 LaPorte voters registered in 2008. Jones has asked for a Justice Department investigation. The Washington Post found out that the purge was supervised by the county's Republican co-director of voter registration, Donna Harris, who happens to be married to LaPorte County Republican Chairman Keith Harris, who appointed her to the job in February of 2010. Now, that Republican Chairman Keith Harris also happens to be on the ballot this year as a candidate for the circuit court clerk. Much of the pruning of the rolls was done while the Democratic co-director was out for 3 months on medical leave. Now, talk about overdoing it with cheating, right? Purging 16% of the voters in the county? Did Donna and Keith Harris really think that they would get away with that? Did they think nobody would notice? Did they think, well, people are going to go show up the polls, they'll be unable to vote, and say, oh, shucks, we couldn't vote. Go home, and then they would forget about it? Folks, this is why early voting is so important. This is why we need at least a month of early voting in advance of each election day. People like the voters in LaPorte County need to show up a month ahead of time and discover if they've been the subject of dirty tricks to purge their registrations. the U.S. Department of Justice and other law enforcement organizations might be able to take action to resolve the issue if there's enough time. If this had happened on Election Day, like it happened to thousands of what should have been eligible black voters in Florida in 2000, they would have been out of luck, and there would have been no way to undo any election outcomes that happened as a result. Now we're going to move on to a recap of next week's news. Again, though, if you want to call in to Making Sense, if you want to talk to me, feel free to call in our call-in line at 917-889-3891. Love to talk to you. So news of the last week. Last weekend, through Monday, you had Rudy Giuliani appearing on every cable news show that would have him, and he said the same things, attacking Obama over Benghazi, even though he had given a complete pass to George W. Bush over 9/11, despite the fact that Bush and his national security team had three warnings from the CIA, multiple warnings during the transition from Clinton's team to beware of al-Qaeda, and several personal appeals from the head of the CIA to Condi Rice, who was then head of the Bush National Security Team. Giuliani's hypocritical statements made this show's nonsense list on Tuesday. Last Monday, we had Todd Akin, already reviled throughout the country for his crazy and nonsensical remarks, suggesting that it's impossible for a woman to get pregnant from rape. Twice in 3 days, called Claire McCaskill, his opponent in the Missouri Senate race, a dog who should go fetch. That also made the nonsense list for Tuesday. Also on last Monday, Joe Walsh, running for Congress in Illinois, claimed in a debate that pregnant women don't die, and so there's no excuse for them to have an abortion, and thus we can outlaw it. This is another nonsense list entry from Tuesday. I love this one. Immortality conferred via pregnancy. Monday was also the third and final debate between President Barack Obama and Mitt Romney. It featured a horrific performance by Mitt Romney. During the entire debate, which was supposed to be about foreign policy, Mitt Romney could not articulate a single coherent bit of policy on any foreign policy issue. When Romney wasn't mimicking the president's position on those issues, he was utterly, completely incoherent on issues like those that we have with China and Iran. All polls after the debate showed a lopsided victory by President Obama. Wednesday, we had Donald Trump's bizarre non-news concerning President Obama that turned out to be nothing more than birtherism 2.0, which made the nonsense list from Thursday. On Thursday, Colin Powell endorsed President Obama and gave a long list of reasons why he thought that Barack would be a much better president than Romney. Late last week broke news of a new television ad by American Crossroads featuring poor Clint Eastwood. I thought it unfair and ugly of them to put him front and center in the campaign again. We also had Arizona's Republican Attorney General Tom Horn, who was under investigation and covert surveillance by the FBI for campaign finance violations, observed by the FBI surveillance team to engage in a hit and run with his car, and it turned out he was driving around his mistress at the time. Court allowed Romney's testimony in the Stemberg divorce case to be unsealed. Could have damaging revelations for Romney, including some suggestions that he perjured himself on the stand to help a friend. Sarah Palin, obviously upset she isn't getting any attention, decided to come out last week with a racist post on Facebook talking about Obama's quote-unquote shuck and jive shtick with Benghazi. We also heard about a new Pennsylvania law proposed by five Republican Pennsylvania legislators that seeks to eliminate an increase in temporary assistance to needy family the benefits for women if a child is conceived while they are covered under the program. Unless, of course, she can prove that she was raped and that she reported it and names her attacker. That made the nonsense list for Thursday. Richard Murdoch, Senate candidate from Indiana, said a child from rape is something that God intended to happen. And thus, abortion should be made illegal, and there should be no rapist exception. God puts rapists up to it, according to Murdoch. Despite this, Romney continues to stand by him and support his candidacy. Now we're going to move on to election predictions. Again, if you want to call into the show, call our call-in line, 917-889-3891. My election predictions start with the premise that out of 50 states, only 10 are in play. The 40 states that are a foregone conclusion provide 217 electoral votes to President Obama and 191 to Mr. Romney. The states that are left are Ohio, Pennsylvania, Florida, Nevada, Iowa, Virginia, New Hampshire, North Carolina, Wisconsin, and Colorado. There's pretty strong consensus by the three organizations that I look to in terms of who is winning in most of those states. I check Nate Silver's 538, Real Clear Politics, and electoral-vote.com. All three of these sites use aggregates of multiple polls to determine who is winning in a state. So in considering all three and making my determinations, it's a strong likelihood that any predictions are right on the money. I want to make 2 points, though, before I get to the numbers. First thing that I should say is that neither Nate Silver's 538 nor electoral-vote.com considers Pennsylvania to be in play. Real Clear Politics is the only of the three organizations that does. My point is that in terms of likely voter preference, Obama is up in Pennsylvania by between 5 and 6%. The problem is the amount of voters who may have trouble voting there due to voter suppression efforts is expected to be high and could cause the end count in Pennsylvania to move back toward Romney by that much or even more. Again, I'll talk about voter suppression later, more later this week. But as I said earlier when talking about the problems in Indiana, the voter suppression issue underscores the need for early voting. And it also underscores the need for more federal oversight in local elections. The other point is regarding momentum. Momentum is an extremely important factor in elections. It's better to be 1 point behind a week before the election if the momentum is going your way than 1 point ahead with the momentum against you. One of the interesting memes going around about the election concerns who has the momentum. Of course, Republicans right now are trying to assert that Mitt Romney has the momentum. That's not what you see when you look at the data. What you see when you look at the average of polls for each state day by day for the last 2 months is that Romney did have momentum starting with the first debate and peaking at around the October 9th, October 10th timeframe. Ever since then, however, there has been a slow but steady momentum shift back towards President Obama to the point that now President has recovered half of the points that Romney picked up in the first debate and continues to pick up more. The momentum right now is clearly with President Obama. Of the 10 swing states, all but New Hampshire and Pennsylvania have early voting. Most have been voting since the first week of October. North Carolina, in fact, has been voting since September 6th. When you take all three poll aggregator organization current estimates into consideration for these 10 states, it predicts that President Obama will get another 64 electoral votes and Romney another 44 electoral votes, giving Obama 281 and Romney 235. 281 obviously being over the total that the president needs to attain reelection. That does not include Colorado and Virginia, because averaging these three polling systems together gives you a tie in those three states, in those two states, excuse me. In my prediction, I give Virginia to Mr. Romney and Colorado to President Obama, resulting in 290 electoral votes for Obama and 248 for Romney. That is my prediction as of today. You can see the spreadsheet where I lay out my prediction at the homepage for this episode or at my blog at stevelaser.blogspot.com. But I want to put a note of caution out there regarding this prediction. This election is really close. The polls and poll aggregator sites make predictions not just based on voter preference and similar factors. They make predictions based on tendencies to turn out and vote. If you decide based on my prediction or some other similar factor not to vote, you're changing that formula. And that could obviously impact the result. A few votes either way could change the selection. Everyone needs to turn out and vote. Finally, we have our Hall of Fame and Shame detailing the best sense and worst nonsense of the week. First, the nonsense. fourth worst in talking nonsense. You've heard me talk about this several times. We had Rudy Giuliani at the beginning of last week. He was appearing on every cable news show that would have him attacking the president over Benghazi. This is really stunning to me, you know, and I think it's worth this repeat because, yeah, he was mayor of New York during 9/11 and gave a complete pass to George W. Bush on those attacks, despite all of the warnings that Bush had. They literally had intelligence saying that al-Qaeda intended to attack the U.S. with airplanes. The Clinton transition team, when they were passing the torch to President Bush in January, they warned him several times, pay attention to al-Qaeda. Pay attention to al-Qaeda. They attacked the coal. They attacked our embassies in Kenya and in Tanzania. You got to watch these guys. They ignored it. It's incomprehensible to me that you have Rudy Giuliani all over Obama on Benghazi and giving a pass to President Bush on 9/11. You either gotta give it to the to Bush on 9/11. You either gotta criticize him and criticize Obama or neither. The third worst nonsense of the week, Joe Walsh, running for Congress in Illinois, claiming pregnant women don't die and there's no excuse for them to have an abortion. Absolutely crazy stuff. Second worst nonsense of the week, you had Mitt Romney in the third debate claiming that Syria is Iran's route to the sea, despite what you obviously see when you look at a map, specifically that Iran has hundreds, maybe even thousands of miles of coastline on the Arabian Sea. But the worst nonsense by far was on Wednesday. Donald Trump's bizarre non-news concerning President Obama, hyped up for a week as some sort of major campaign event that would change the course of the election, turns out to be nothing more than, as I say, I call it birtherism 2.0, and a request for President Obama's passport and college transcript in exchange for $5 million in charity. As I said at the time, Donald, this is absolutely crazy stuff. Get an MRI, get yourself checked out, figure out what is wrong with you, but this is absolute nonsense. Now let's turn to who made particularly good sense this week. There was one startling piece of sense this week that so outshined the others, I am making it the one and only entry in the making sense category this week. It's an unusual one in that it comes from a media source that intentionally makes jokes and distorts current events for comedic effect. Either intentionally or accidentally, however, this time, The Onion made so much sense, it was shocking. An article from The Onion on Friday had the following excerpt. At press time, multiple male Senate candidates in their 60s remain divided between those who believe pregnancies resulting from rape are biologically impossible and those who believe they are the divine will of God. To the folks at The Onion, the only thing I can say is, wow. That was some of the sharpest and most concise commentary on the GOP's war on women I have seen. Well done. Great sense. That's all I have for today's show. Thank you again for listening in. The next episode of Making Sense with Steve Laser will air Tuesday night at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, weather permitting. For all of us here on the East Coast, I hope you all stay safe from the storm. See you all then, and have a great rest of your Sunday.
Open Gangnam Style. Gangnam Style.
Nagin and Sasaro, Ungina, Yogi, Yoja, Copy.